So welcome to Elaine's Literary Salon. I'm really excited about our book launch today. I'm Jeffrey Higgins. This Elaine's is my wife Cynthia's restaurant. It's Alexandrian cuisine based on our family recipes from Alexandria, Egypt. And we've turned it into a literary salon where we give authors a free space to celebrate their work. To date, I think you're the 212th author I've interviewed, although you've been here before, so you count twice.
Yes.
So you're 211B.
B.
All right, fantastic. We have a podcast from our literary salon. It's elainesliterarysalon.com. You can see our schedule, and our podcast is number one on Apple and on Spotify for Literary Salon, so please check us out.
Thank you.
We're excited. We've been fortunate to have a lot of really talented authors in here, and it's just so much fun to. It's really like one of my private joys to be able to chat with authors about their books and bringing their stories into the world. Mm-hmm. So Paula Mays is an attorney with over 30 years of experience. Her legal experience has varied from a start in criminal law to intellectual property, specifically trademarks, and now healthcare. She's also pursued a master's in public health from the George Washington University late in her career. It's an interesting field, and public health affects everyone. Paula is a native of Washington, D.C., raised by a single mother who was both brilliant and resourceful. Paula attended boarding school at St. Timothy's in Stevenson, Maryland, a Baltimore suburb, as her mother was concerned that the black students were not being well educated in schools facing conflict from the new policy of busing. What year was that?
19 room.
Okay. Yes. Paula wants her mystery novels to express the beauty in diversity. This is Paula's second appearance with us. She's here to discuss Murder in La Galleria de Art, a Mauro Spain mystery.
Marco.
I'm missing a C in Mauro.
It's his name. Yes. Marco in Spain.
A Marco Spain mystery.
Yeah, the protagonist.
So please welcome Paula Mays back to Elaine's.
Thank you.
So Paula, it's good to have you back.
Thank you so much for the literary salon.
Pull this up and close.
Thank you again for the literary salon. I mean, I think all the authors are so thankful to have a space. I wouldn't have a book launch without it because I wouldn't know what to do. So
you know, it's not just the authors. It's all the readers and the people coming in who love story, love to meet the authors and hear the story behind the story, which is what we're here to do today.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us, just give us a little bit, what's the book about? No spoilers, little back jacket copy.
Yeah.
So for people who haven't read it.
Okay. So as you said, it's the third in the series published by Level Best Books. And Level Best is the publisher, and they publish a lot of our mystery books, which is really good. And so this is the third in the series. There's a standalone book involving the same protagonist, but this series is number two, and it's called Murder in La Galleria de Art. And so it's about Marco, who's our protagonist, is faced with solving these murders with Detective Flores, who's of the police force, and he's a detective, and they always end up together, even though they're not the same at all. Flores thinks Marco's a hot shot. And he thinks, you know, he's kind of Mr. Cool, and Flores is kind of by the book. So they have to team, they're forced to team up. And because Marco is half Spanish and half Moroccan, because I put diversity in my characters. The thing being showing there's good and bad in everyone. So we have everyone in here. So some are good and some are bad, and they're from every race. They could be from these races. So Marco happens to be half Spanish and half Moroccan. So he's called in as a private detective because there's a, you know, Spain, this part of Spain that I always went to, Marbella is right next to Morocco, Tangier. So there are a lot of like half Spanish, half Moroccan people there. So it's very reasonable that he would be like that. And I actually had this really good looking cab driver. That's where I got it from.
See, now we're getting to the real stuff.
I even took my friend with me once, and the first thing she said was, "Oh my God, where's that cab driver?" So that's where I kind of got the idea of the half Moroccan, half Spain. So anyway, in this case, a person who opened a gallery of art in the middle of downtown what is Marbella, which is the real place, but I named it Viva Rambla because you're not supposed to use the real name of a place. But he opened an art gallery, and somebody gets killed in the gallery. So he and the detective Flores have to determine why somebody would kill somebody he just opened an art gallery. And then they have all these adventures, and they end up going to Britain, the UK, Morocco, and Tangier, where Marco's grandmother is from. He talks about his grandmother all the time.
So out of 211 and 1.5 authors, that's the first time I've heard someone said, oh, the cab driver was hot, so I wrote this book. So I'm curious. At the beginning, you said there was a standalone, then there's two in a series. But if it's all the same protagonists, like, how did you differentiate between a series? Because sometimes series are based on, you know, situation, or they can be based on geographical location, or on protagonists. So is it the same continuation of the story from book one to book two?
Well, no. In actuality, I just had a publisher, a small publisher for the first book, and then Level Best gave you a three-book series. So this is book two. Everyone gets this confused. This is book two of Level Best three-book series.
All right. So how long did this one take you to write? I'm always curious because it's so different with authors.
I think it's like a year or something. I think a year. I would say a year. Because I don't remember exactly, but I think a year.
How did that experience change from the first book? Because I interviewed you right after you did your first book.
Second. That was the first book in the series of Level From Level Best book. The first book, Murder in the Parador.
All right, let's start over. So I'm Jeffrey Higgins. I'm welcome to the Nancy Berry Salon.
The first book is called Murder in the Parador, which my friend Lynn here was the first person to buy and held it up and showed me a picture. I think she was the first purchaser. So yay, Lynn. So that was by a whole other publisher, a small independent publisher. Then after I went to like a Sisters in Crime conference, Level Best Book said, would you like a three-book series for your other book? So that was number one in that series, which is what I talked about here, which was Murder in La Plaza de Toro. And anyway, I'm going through this whole murder in Spanish thing, in case you haven't noticed. Yeah. There's a theme here, murder in something Spanish.
Now we all want to see a picture of the cab driver. What was going on over there, Paula?
But I'm saying he just inspired me to come up with the half Spanish, half Moroccan thing. So that's what. Yeah, no, there's a whole issue between, you know, people from Morocco versus Europe, you know, and how they're being treated, you know, because Marco is all the time called a gypsy. Which is not a good connotation because of his looks. They're like, oh, you must be a gypsy. So there's an issue there. So that's why I was trying to bring out the racism issue, too.
So I'm hesitant to ask a series question again, but I'm still curious. So, like, how did when you got this series from Level Best, when they're making this offer, did you already have an idea for a bunch of different books in this world? Or were you just like, serious, you want three books? You got it.
Right. B.
Okay. So where did the idea for this one come up? Like, I'm always really curious, like, because, you know, writers are making these things out of whole cloth usually, right? Sometimes they take something that happened in real life and they're just fictionalizing it. But where did this come from?
Well, I take things that I'm interested in, like what you'll find that I find is like the Spanish Civil War. No one ever talks about the Spanish Civil War. I thought that was interesting. And the other thing is Salvador Dali, who actually was in Spain and actually did party in Spain and have all kinds of people have wild parties there. And there's these statues to Salvador Dali in this part, all over part of town. So that's why those two things were very interesting to me, like I said. So like his history, I find interesting.
So that's so cool. So as a novelist, when you see something like that, like a lot of people look at art and they enjoy it and they look at it for art's sake, but you look at it and you start thinking up a fictional plot. Like how does that work in a novelist's mind?
Well, I also do watercolor, so I like art too. Oh yes, I watercolored this lovely picture here.
Hold the mic up so we can.
I watercolored this lovely picture.
You did that?
Yes.
Wow, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you've got bookmarks here too, right?
Yes. So you can purchase the book. A lot of times at these things, the authors bring the books, but that it takes like 6 months or so sometimes, or a few months to get them. So keep from having the risk of them not getting here in time. You can have a bookmark on the back has a QR code.
I love the QR code, right? You've welcome to the 21st century.
Exactly.
That works really well.
Yeah.
So when did the book launch?
May. It was a little bit late, so I think it was May.
Okay. All right. So let's go back a little into the characters, right? So when you had this character from the previous books and you had the standalone.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're tell us how you create characters. You had the idea, we understand where that came from, but how do you populate traits and characteristics and problems, and tell us a little bit about like the name, like how do you build this character so it's somebody that's believable but also three-dimensional, so that when people read it feels like a real person.
Well, so Jeff, as you know, Jeff has several books of his own, right? So as you know some of these things kind of write themselves. They kind of like come up and they say, well, I want to be in this book. Because in order to foster the next thing, it leads to a person that has to do that thing. And then I'm good for like looking up a name. What would be a good Moroccan name? That sounds good. And the funny thing about, I do have a funny story about this book. Because it's supposed to be, because I told you I like history. So it's supposed to be about a famous painting from the time of Boabdil, who was the last leader of Spain before Isabel and Ferdinand. Does that make sense so far? So Boabdil was actually the last leader. So I made up that this painter from that time had made this painting. And I named him Samaya Runya because that sounded like a name of somebody who made the painting. So our friend Suzanne, who's not here, who helps with the paintings on the book, she kept thinking, it's not real, Suzanne, I'm telling you. She's like, well, Samaya Runya, I've never heard of him. I made him up, Suzanne. And then the next time she'd be like, well, who is this Samaya Runya? I made him up, Suzanne. So funny. And she could not get it through her head that this Samaya Runya guy.
I mean, that's a compliment to you, right? That the character come across so authentically.
That was funny.
But when you're talking about like real paintings or real moments in history, how much do you have to like honor the actual history and the actual people? Like, if it's all a fictionalized world, you can do whatever you want, right? But when you're living with your fictional world inside the real world, how do you do that? How do you balance like talking about real things?
Yeah, like historical fiction. So like, I like historical fiction. I know a lot of us women like historical fiction, right? So like the real events, like I said, Boabdil is real, but there's no Samaya Runya. He made the painting. So I think like if you read historical fiction, they take a real world event and put characters in it. Do you know what I mean? Or events in it.
So how much liberty do you give yourself to like change an actual event or alter it or insert your fictional character inside like a real incident that happened?
Yeah, I would do that. I don't like to have it to be inaccurate. You know, so I like it to have the accurate history, and then you just insert the character. This is really my first historical fiction character.
So because you're calling this historical fiction, are you getting to a different audience, or do you feel like it's still the same people that read the first one? Because they're slightly different subgenres, right?
Yeah, but I don't know what audience I'm getting to yet, because I'm just working on the audience, so I'm not the best marketer in the world. That's why I thought I loved
it. None of us are. Trying to get someone to find your books is very difficult right now. All right, so you create these characters. How do you make them so authentic that you're fooling people and they can't believe that they're actually made up, how do you plan out like the arc for the character? Like, you know, they say there has to be change from the beginning to the end, right? Something in the story has to influence that. Are you when you're developing these characters, are you saying, okay, this is where they are, these are their flaws, or this is something that they, a misbelief that they have, and then it'll change? Like, walk us through that process. Pick one of your characters. How did that work in this book?
Well, one of the characters, well, Samaya Runya's dead because he was from the 16th century. Oh, so not him, but the other characters, they try to evolve. Yeah. and the bad character to try not to give away the story. So they appear to be nice people at first. So that's what I think is a challenge, not to give away the, you know, you have to put them, and you learn from Sisters in Crime, to tell you the truth, I think, by attending the, you know, different things they have. I think you actually learned a lot about plotting. And
so a lot of times when people are reading mysteries, they'll be like, oh my God, the author is so brilliant. Like, how did they seed this at the very beginning? How did they know this was going to happen? When the truth is often the author figures it out at the end and goes back and sticks it in the beginning. Right. Is that what happens with you?
Yeah, that's one thing I learned from Sisters of Time. You go back and you sprinkle in the clues. Yeah. So it seems like you put it in the beginning, but really you went back. Well, sometimes you did, but a lot of times you go back and sprinkle in, as they call it, sprinkle in the clues here and there. Right, Jeff? You agree?
I don't sprinkle anything in my books.
Oh, you don't? You already know who the clues are?
No, the thrillers aren't the same as mysteries, but I have done mysteries. So yeah, you have to give them enough. But how do you decide when is too much? Like, how much do you want some percentage of your readership to, like, figure out the mystery? Like, is the dangerous, right? If someone gets the end and they're like, no one could have figured that out, it's not very satisfying.
Well, I don't mind if they figure out if there's another surprise. Like, you know, sometimes I have it where I thought the first book you might could have figured out who it was, but you didn't figure out the other surprise. So, you know what I mean? So you might be like, oh, I thought I knew everything, but you just knew who the murderer was, but you didn't know.
Did you get feedback from people afterwards about that? Like, it's always interesting, right, to hear what the readers,
yes.
Did you fool them? What did they like?
Yeah, I know. I like to know that too. But this one, so far, everybody seems to be fooled. Yeah. So I guess I did a good job, because they were like, I had no idea.
You know, there was a study recently that I read, and people that were actually had a higher level of enjoyment when they knew who did it before reading. Did you see this thing? It came out in probably the last 6 months, which is very counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
But people, I think it's just knowing what was happening, they were ahead of everybody in the book, and somehow watching it come together was like maybe more relaxing. I don't know exactly why, but they actually found it more interesting.
Oh,
but I like fooling them like you.
Yeah, I like that.
So how many twists do you have to have in a book like this?
Well, I think that's the hardest part, is like, the hardest part to me is the middle, because you don't want people to get bored. So you have to have, like, to me, that's the most difficult part, is to moving the story along so people don't get bored.
Well, they call it the muddy middle, right? So
yeah.
when you're writing, do you get bogged down as an author in the middle?
Yes.
Are you feeling like, so explain that to people. Like, when you're in the middle, this is the conflict, right? Sometimes they call it the fun and games, but they call it the try-fail cycles, right? This is the middle of the book where your protagonist is trying to get something and they're trying and failing. So what about that can bog you down?
What happened next? You're like, what happened now? Because you know he wanted them to do something, but you're like, well, now what? You know what I mean? How do you, yeah.
So do you not plan that out? Do you know the ending? Like, in this book, did you know who did it and what the ending was before you started?
Well, I think, this is weird, but I'm telling you, these books tell you. You might not believe it, but these books tell you what they want to do. They do. I mean, they kind of go, you know, I think I want to be, I mean, obviously they'll sit and talk to you, but it kind of comes to you in the book. You know, then you feel like the book led you along as to where it want to go. It really does, which is interesting. As many authors, they'll probably tell you it's kind of interesting. Do you agree, Jeff?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you say, like, the book doesn't talk to you, but I actually know a lot of authors who the characters do talk to them.
Yeah.
Do the characters ever surprise you in the actions they take or the things that they say that you felt like you wouldn't have done that?
Yeah, they do. I think so.
So where does that come from? Like, I mean, that's weird for readers to hear, right? That authors, is all coming out of you. You're writing this down.
Yeah.
So, like, how can the author who's created this character and set up the situation be surprised by the way a character acts in the book? Because they don't act that way until you actually write it or type it.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess logical flow from the events that occurred. I don't know. That's what I would think, the events that happened.
How long does it take you to get into that character's head? Like, as you're, like, how much do they develop? When you first start, How much do you know about the character?
Well, I mean, I try to do a good job. So I try to be, like, thorough and do my research. But I try to do a good job because I don't want to write junk out there. So I try to do a good job and be thorough so it'd be...
So, like, when you say thorough, are you talking about before you start writing? Are you, do you do, like, a character sketch? Do you know their backstory? Do you know what their flaws are? Do you know like, their character quirks? Or is that stuff that you learn as you write them?
The major characters you're supposed to map out. But the minor characters, you don't have to know all that. But the major characters, you should know their, even if you don't write it in the story, you should know it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you give them a whole little family. And even though you might not put the whole family in the book, but really if someone's to ask you, he has a little family, a sister, a mother, you know, something like that.
So how deep do you go? Like, how much, that's interesting. How much do you write for backstory that doesn't end up in the book? Like, how much of it, like, what percentage of do you write for a character or that you, do you research before you start writing that, like, maybe doesn't end up in the book?
I don't do a lot of that. I'm, like, more researching historical facts type person.
So for the characters, do you have the full character before you start, or do you have to write
the
them?
The major characters.
Okay.
Yeah, minor characters, it doesn't matter. But the major characters, you should have an idea. Some kind of story. Like, Flores in my mind has a wife. Well, sometimes he talks about his wife. And he has a kid, you know what I mean? And he's, like, goes to church every Sunday. He's very straight-laced, Catholic. So that's what in my mind.
So let's talk about the setting. You obviously have a fascination with Spain, right? So what is it about Spain that got you excited besides the cab drive?
Have you been there?
Yes.
Have you been to southern Spain?
Yes.
It's beautiful, is it?
It's gorgeous.
Yes, I loved it there. And Lynn heard all the time when she had to listen to my stories, and Carla, they had to listen to my stories for several years about beautiful southern Spain.
So, like, what was it about that drove your passion to, like, because when you write a book, it took you a year, right? Where you set the book matters. What was it? Is it just the natural beauty of the place that made you want to use it as setting?
Well, I like Spain, and I was also influenced by, I don't know if anybody has seen the international mysteries they have on. They have these international mysteries, some from Italy, some from Italy, France. They have one called Murder Inn, which is really good. Theater, didn't I tell you about this? MAZ, the mystery channel. Yeah, I told people about that. MAZ, they have mysteries from around the world. And so I started watching them is what made me. I was like, mysteries are a beautiful place. And Spain, Julie Shields, we can do that. So that's pretty well. Yeah, because they have really good ones. They were kind of famous for people who watch them, like Montalbano, set in beautiful Italy, is one. And Inspector Brunetti, also set in Italy. They're well known by people who read.
So how important is it for the author to actually visit a place and go there and touch the grass and see it?
Well, for me, I try not to put places that I haven't been, unless it's just like I sent somebody to the University of Glasgow. I've never been there, but I try not to put things that I don't know about because they're not in my head. So
what is it? What is it that gets in your head when you're physically in a place? Because, I mean, you can look at YouTube and Google Earth, and right? There's a lot of ways to research a place. What is it that's different about you physically being present before you write something?
Well, like I was telling you about the Dali, the Salvador Dali statues. Like, you wouldn't know that if you weren't there. Like, in the plaza in Marbella, there's all these Dali statues, like I said. You wouldn't know that if you hadn't been there, because it's not something you hear about. It's like that type of thing. That, like, I know there are these statues, and I know where they are, that kind of thing.
How much do you do, like, multi-sensory description when you're writing these things? Because places smell different, right? Mm-hmm. They feel different. The wind is different. How much of that gets into your book?
A lot. I'm big on that. Because, like, in Spain, for example, it smells like oranges, the orange trees, the Plaza de Naranja. It does smell like that, too. It smells like oranges and blossoms. And it really does smell like that. Again, about being there, I know it smells like that, right?
But those are the cool details that make readers realize. It just, even if you haven't been there, when you put that in there, it makes it feel authentic.
Yes.
So when you're doing a plot, like, mysteries are different. I write thrillers, right? I've written one mystery, but they are different in that you're trying to solve something, right? So you have the crime at the beginning, you have the murder, and you're walking through. how much detail within that murder, within the A plot, right? Like, not everything that you're writing, but how much of that do you have to like map out and diagram before this thing starts? Because it is a puzzle, right? So, you know, without knowing the full puzzle, it's kind of hard to break it up into pieces and filter it in or sprinkle it in, like you say.
Okay, so I'm like, how is thrillers different? Don't you have to do that as well for a thriller?
I mean, they're not mysteries, right? So thrillers are more about preventing something from happening.
Yeah.
And mysteries are just generally, right, are more about solving something that's already happened. So they're somewhat different in those. There can be mystery thrillers, you know, and there's other similarities, but it's very different. Like, thrillers are not like solve that crime that happened.
Okay.
So how much of it like do you have to like figure out before you're doing it? So they're complicated. Like everyone loves mysteries, right? You're watching it on TV, you're reading a book, like you're trying to figure it out. And you have smart readers here.
These are brilliant readers. Not just smart.
And they read in this genre. And so they've seen the tropes, right? They've seen a lot of story. They've written and imbibed a lot of story over the years. So it's hard to fool people. So like when you have all these intelligent readers who are digging in as they go, because that's the fun of it, trying to figure it out as you go. How much of that do you have to map out? Like, how ingenious, I guess, do your murders have to be?
Well, they call it the sisters of crime. They have the pansies who write off the top of their head and the plotters. And the people in between. I'm the people in between. You know what I mean? Or a plot. So you're not plotting out. You know, some people are very outlined, detailed. If I did that, I wouldn't end up doing what it said. So, and then I'm the in between that kind of like has an outline, but then, like I said, what happens next?
Does that kill a little of your enthusiasm when you're outlining or planning too much in advance?
Well, I don't do that. I can't do that. I wouldn't even know what to say. So I'm an in-between person.
Okay.
Yeah, you just kind of, like, I thought, I want to know about the Spanish Civil War. It's the things you want to know about. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, I think, I'm also interested in the whole Belle Abdil period. So I thought that was all kind of interesting. And things you don't hear about.
So,
as Lynn knows, I helped in an antique shop. So that appears in here, Lynn, with the antique ship, with the issue of the silver, right?
So other than being in a place in person, what are the other research techniques you do? Because you're talking about a lot of different things that people don't know about. How did you research this book?
Just general looking up Google, you know, to make sure I had that. Like, for example, I wanted to have the painting, so I was like, what would a painting of this century look like, and what century would it be to make sure it's accurate time period, you know? So what would it look like? What would the author of that time period look like to make sure I have accurate information? It just doesn't sound silly. And plus, I want to know anyway. And then also, it was interesting. I started looking up the Spanish Civil War, and then I found out that there were these Moroccan troops that were loyal to Franco. I don't know if you all knew that, but I didn't know that. I thought they were called the Marabouts or something. I think it's in here. And they all were loyal to Franco. And they raised money for Franco's revolution. I thought that was kind of interesting. That kind of stuff. Interesting.
So when you find interesting facts like that, how do you know how much to put in the book? How do you know if it's like driving your plot or if it's just something super interesting that you discovered? Like,
well,
it
drove the plot. It was in the plot because it relates to the plot.
Like in general, how do you know like when to put something in? Because I'm sure you do a lot of research. It doesn't end up in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think as your story goes along, or that like they say, kill your darlings. You don't have to put everything in there, even if you thought it was wonderful. But you know, as your story goes along, you know, I think you're gonna say, oh, this would fit, and the other might be interesting, but it would not fit into the story.
So when you say like fit, so it's whether the fact is relevant to the A plot or relevant to the character.
Yes, or you're supposed to it's always supposed to further the story. I think they tell us.
What was the strangest or most interesting thing you found while you were researching this?
About the Moroccans that were loyal to Franco. I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me. I'm sort of a nerd. But I thought that was kind of interesting that they had whole organized groups of people that were loyal to Franco.
Do you get feedback from readers on like interesting facts like that when they things they've said, oh, I didn't know this in your book, or is this true?
Well, this is too new, I think, for that.
With your other books?
No, not really. I don't think so.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, what do your readers now that you've had some exposure to the reading public? Well, what is the kind of feedback you get, or what is it that you like to hear back from readers that can drive your new work as you're writing?
Well, honestly, usually people are very nice. I don't know if they're just being nice, but usually they like the books. So every time they've always been very nice. So I don't know if they're just my friends and they're being nice, but usually they have like really nice things to say. One thing they say a lot is it reads fast.
That's a great compliment. That's probably the best one, right? Because people are reading it for entertainment.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So. When you've been writing for a while now, how has this recent book, like, how did your experience change? And I'm talking about like craft, like how have you evolved as an author since you first started writing?
Well, you might agree with this too. I think you feel like you know a little bit more about what you're doing, and I'm like the worst typist in the world, so it helps to know a little bit more about what you're doing to cut down on the typing. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? So that's how I think it's a little bit better.
I'm a horrible typist, so I dictate. Do you ever dictate?
No.
You should try it. It's for all those horrible typists should get together and you can just speak the words.
Yeah, exactly.
What is it? Because writing is really hard. You said you spent a year doing this, right? I mean, it's hard. And I think everyone thinks they have a book in them, but then when they start doing it, they realize there's a lot of technique. There's a lot of things we don't know because we're always learning. Every book you write, everything you write, you get better. So, what is it that drives you to take on something that's hard like this? Because their books are generally, most people don't know, but they're not financially really viable, right? Like even the big five top books, they sell less than 2,000 copies. 90% sell less than 2,000 copies. So, what is it that drives you to like write this book? What is it that you get from it?
I think once you get started, you just kind of get interested in it. Once you get started, you know what I mean? You just kind of get, and I think like, again, Sisters in Crime, having other people who do the same thing, attending those meetings.
So that's what you're doing is like process, right, to get through the book. But like, what do you get from it? Do you enjoy writing or do you enjoy having finished the book? Do you enjoy like just holding this up now and saying, look what I did? Or do you enjoy sitting down in front of the computer every day and typing?
I like the editing part. I don't like the way you get stuck in the middle part. But I like the editing, the rewriting. I like to scratch it out and rewrite it. And I like that. But the part where you get stuck in the middle is kind of frustrating, but I do like the rewrite thing. Mm-hmm. I have no problem like Xing stuff out. You know how some people are like, I didn't want to take it out. I'm like, no.
I mean, that's gold for a writer, right?
Yeah,
having that ability is really good because everyone has struggled. Have you ever struggled by like you really should cut something, but you left it in there because you liked it?
No, I don't have a problem with it.
Good for you. You're unlike most writers. So is it in the editing? Is it because you see it getting more polished because
yes.
It's coming together?
Right. I agree. It's more polished. I agree.
I think I asked you this the last time, but it's been years. when did you first know you wanted to be a writer?
Well, as I was saying, I was talking to a friend of mine, Julie, who unfortunately I think she went out of town, so she couldn't come today. And we started discussing it. And I said, it'd be fun to write a book. And she was like, well, if you got to write a book, you have to write a real book. So, and then we had a little writing group for a while. And,
So it wasn't something that you'd always thought about, or it just came up like later
in life?
Well,
you write I think I always wrote like articles here and there with different things, but not books. Yeah.
So when you were like a child, were you ever captivated by fiction? Did you ever think, this is something I want to do?
Oh, no, but I read it,
Do you remember, did any particular books have like an impact on you when you were younger?
Yeah, but a lot of books, but I can't remember. But a lot of books.
We're just going to have to trust
you.
I like the literature.
Yeah, I like okay. French literature a lot. I thought that was really good.
Interesting.
Yeah, like Madame Bovary, that kind of, I love those kind of books.
Yeah, who doesn't
and
like
Louis
that?
Dostoy, I'm like a kind of nerd. So Dostoevsky, I love his books. I still like them. I reread them.
Do you still reread them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you write very differently than that, right? I mean, it's not as you're writing, like you say, it's faster paced, right?
Yeah, right.
It's not dense.
Not
it's not as dark. Yeah, no, those are
but
not
I like
quick
those
reads.
Books, though. Yeah, I love those books, though. So, I'm reading right now The Adolescent. That's another Dostoevsky book, The Adolescent. Yeah, I like that.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. So, what? Tell us a little bit about your process. Do you write every day?
No, I do like 5 different things, so no.
How often do you write?
On the weekends or free time. Although if I had a deadline, for example, book 3 in the series of number 3 for Level Best Book was due Monday. And you can ask Cynthia. I was like, sorry, Cynthia can't talk to you right now because I got to finish this book. So at the end, you know, you're like trying to scramble to get that through.
Did you get it in?
I did.
Congratulations. That's a
draft.
Big deal.
Yeah, that's the first.
You know, that is hard. I've actually read that most authors, like the majority, I don't know how big a majority, but the majority blow their deadlines.
Oh, really?
Which is shocking to me. Yeah, I can't imagine doing that. But so, like you say, it takes a year, but you're writing on weekends. If you don't write all week when you're doing other things, how hard is it for you to get the story back in your head when you sit down to write?
Oh, it's not, because I tend to be still thinking about this. It helps because I still think about the character.
You mean during the week, you're still in your head? Mm-hmm. So, as things occur to you, like, you know, dialogue or snippets of dialogue or character or whatever during the week, do you write them down or do you wait for the weekend?
No, sometimes I have to remember. Because this next one, to give you a preview, there's a murder in a cathedral. So I had to, you know, I was thinking about how would that happen and what would happen there. So if I remember, you should write it down, because if you don't, you totally forget. A good thought. So I try to do that.
Yeah. I do more as I get older too. Yeah. If I don't write it down,
right.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's a mystery.
So do you you're writing every day? Do you have to, or every on the weekends? Do you have to write in a specific place? Like a lot of people have, like, you know, their writing cave, or can you just write anywhere?
I could, but I have a little desk. But now, that wouldn't bother me.
Do you listen?
I mean,
to
where my computer is. Yeah.
Yeah, that would help. It would help being in the same space as your computer. So do you listen to music when you write, or do you need just utter silence?
Well, I listen to YouTube videos.
Really? like what? Now we're getting to something. Is it like cab drivers of the continent?
No.
Or what are you?
That was just one guy, Pedro. He was nice. He was my buddy. He said that women used to pick him up. And they would get in his cab and proposition him. Can you imagine? Anyway, I just remember that because I just thought that was so bold. Could you imagine, like, getting in someone's cab? And then, anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting.
What kind of videos are you watching? I mean, it's like, I'm trying to think, like, just because, you know, being distracted, right? Like some people have to have total silence. I listen to, like, instrumental music. I can't even listen to music with lyrics. How are you watching videos and writing? That's got to be really hard.
Yeah, I can do it. Multitask very well. Yeah.
Just any kind of videos?
No, it goes from, you know, you have your certain favorites from politics to, well, I kind of get sick of that. But you have your, you know, the fashion one, over 50 lady, how to dress over 50, that kind of thing. And then you have your fashion, you know what I mean? Yeah, and then you have people talking about politics, or now I'm this one lady who dresses all the time and she cleans her house while dressed up. Which I can't imagine. So I think that's it, you know.
Do you dress up when you're writing?
No. I don't clean my house dress up either. Do you all? That's apparently a thing now, in case you didn't know. With the young women now, if a lot of these young women are preaching that you should wear dresses all the time.
But while you're cleaning?
No, not even tread wife. They have the tread wives, but these are like not really tread wives, but they all are, while they're cleaning. Like, she cleans the bathroom, her little nice dress and everything. But this is apparently like a young people thing, in case you all didn't know that.
Are the husbands like mowing the lawn in tuxedos?
Yeah.
Kind of in a loss.
Right. They are, seriously. There are several little, I've seen several of these channels. that's what I think is interesting. Yeah. And they explain why you should wear a dress all the time, as opposed to, I guess they're getting, you know, something connoisseur is her name, Jennifer, the chic connoisseur or something. But yeah, it's a young people thing.
So
learn something, right?
I'm learning a lot. So what are you writing in? Like, what software are you writing?
I was going to say, not a dress.
No, like Word or Scrivener. Or like,
Word.
What do you?
Word.
What tools do you use to
Word.
Write? And for editing, the part that you enjoy the most, are you using like, you know, AutoCrit or Pro Writing Aid, or do you use some kind of editing software?
No, but I think I would. I haven't looked into that, but I think I will, because that'll help you.
Yeah, it can be really helpful.
Yeah.
So what are like your iterations here? You write, do you edit as you go, or you said you enjoy the editing? So it's like you get through the whole first draft?
Yeah, because you get bogged down, and I would get bogged down. So
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people. I mean, it may intuitively make sense, but
exactly.
I couldn't do it. Right.
So
you get to the end, you edit. How many times are you going through a book? Like how much of it over that year? How much of that was editing?
Well, since there's a deadline, you just edit it much, but when you get it back, then you know a good tool is you listen to it on the computer. You can listen to your own book on the computer, yeah.
Well, what software do you use
no,
to listen
you
to
don't
it?
Need a software, it's on your Word.
Oh, you just use the read back in Word.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you listen to it, it's so interesting to listen to your story, have someone else read it, you pick up things that you would have noticed, like double A's or mm-hmm. things like that. And then it sounds different if someone is reading it back to you. So.
Also, the rhythm of the words, right?
Exactly.
Like I found it's really helpful in dialogue,
yes.
Read that out loud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get through all this. What do you go to, like a beta reader? Do you go to a writing group? Like, what do you do before you send this to Level Best?
Well, nothing now. I just send it in. They get really good feedback. Sean, Sean, she's really good. She has excellent feedback. She gives it back to you, the first draft. It's given back to you by the publisher. But they have really good feedback, things you didn't even think of.
So, I mean, a lot of people, if you haven't published with a traditional publisher, don't know what that's like. So, like, how many iterations back and forth with your publisher? How many levels of editing? Are they doing, like, structural and copy editing and proofreading? Or is it one edit, and then you get it back multiple times? Well, tell us, how did that work?
Well, my experience, I don't know everybody's experience with the Level Best, but they give it back to you, and then one of them, particularly a woman named Sean, who's very good, she, you know, marks it all up, and then you send it back to her, and then they give you another chance.
And you mentioned that this was a watercolor that you did.
Yeah.
How much say do you have in, like, the cover?
Well, they're good, too, because, and also Sean, I'm bragging on Sean tonight. She should be here. But so I said, Sean, I have this watercolor. I want it to look like a painting in a museum. So she did the nice gold. She's really good. So she sent it back to you with the gold. Because that was supposed to be like Samaya Runya's painting in a museum. So that's why it says SR. For the non-existent, not real Samaya Runya. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, she gave it. She is really good. She's a very good art editor.
Yeah, no, it's a really pretty cover.
Thank you.
So what is that like then? It's so hard for you for anyone to finish a book, right? So it's like 1% of people who start the book ever finish it. And then to get it published is even traditionally published like you did is a much lower percentage. So once the book comes out, like what happens then? Because that's changed from even 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like what did you do? Okay, the book launched in May. What is your role as the author going forward?
Well, I understand that even with the traditional publishers, they don't really market people's books that much anymore. So really you're supposed to be good at marketing, which I am not. So the best thing is to figure out how to be a better marketer. Because even, like I said, even traditional, I mean, I guess if you're like one of the big top million-dollar David Balducci or something. But I think even for, you know, kind of high-paid authors, they don't really market. So that's the challenge is to figure out how, I mean, that's my experience. I could be wrong. But my experience is figuring out how to be a better marketer. And that also, it just makes me tired to even think about it. You know?
So I don't know if you saw, there was an article that came out on Substack. I think it was Amy Chan recently, and she said the two things that worked were podcasts and in-person events like you're doing here. Mm-hmm. Has that been your experience? What is it that seems to be working over all your books?
Well, I just word of mouth and having, I think your launch, Jeff, at that, but getting a thank you, because I think the book launch does help. It really does. And thank you, Hope. This is Hope. She helped with the publicizing.
Yeah. Hope Gibbs, our PR director. She does our podcast.
So we thank Hope. So I think it does help to have this help.
Do you enjoy it? Like when you're here, I mean, you have your friends,
good.
But you also talk about your book with people you don't know.
Yes.
Do you enjoy getting out there and talking about your work?
Yes, but and I love seeing my friends I haven't seen, especially I used to work with, and you haven't seen them for a long time. And it's a good reason to have them come together and have food and do something fun. I hope they have fun.
Yeah. All right, so I want to, if anybody has questions, I'll come around with the microphone, and I just wanted to be able to pick up for our podcast. Does anybody have questions you'd like to ask her? Anything about, here we go, hold on one sec.
I'd like to ask, what is your favorite method of killing off your characters? Is it poison, or is it guns, or knives, or strangling, or...
That's a good question, Catherine. I kind of like the poison thing, because the guns, we don't want to encourage like real violence, because these are fake violence. So the Christian boards are kind of poisoning thing. I like that the best. That's a very good question, because I don't want to encourage real violence or real gun use.
What about real violence with poison?
Yeah, but how many people poison people? Like my first book, it was poisoned with foxglove. How often does that happen? Which is a plant, a foxglove plant. So it does not likely to happen. Although this poor guy was strangled.
Other questions? Okay, we got a bunch. Hold on. I'll come around to everybody.
So I'm just curious, how did you choose mystery as your genre? How did that be, how was that exciting to you?
Because I was watching all those mysteries on MHZ. Like Montalbano. Those are good. You should check them out. Inspector Brunetti, they're good. And then they have ones from Sweden. Well, everyone's seen Wallander, right? But the real Wallander, which has had this MHZ has this real British, Swedish version. So I'm watching all those mysteries. Yeah.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, Heather.
We've all heard about how you don't like the middle. So what are you more excited about, getting the start or getting the end?
The end.
What is your favorite? Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you have any like things that you do when you finish a book? Do you have a glass of champagne? Do you do a little celebration?
I was too tired on Monday.
Okay, you're done.
I was like, thank God.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite part just writing? Do you have a favorite place? You said you kind of write all over.
I have a little office desk thing in my little place. It's a little desk office.
That's awesome.
Yeah, with my little computer.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for sharing.
And my YouTube video is right here. Right there.
Hey, Paula, don't give too much away, but does Marco ever marry his live-in girlfriend?
Well, that's an excellent question, Carla. I like her. That shows that she knows what's going on. But I'm not telling you. But that's a good question.
I knew you would.
That's an excellent question, though. That really is. And good insight, because I'm glad you picked it up, because I do try to make that a thing for you to worry about. Like, you know, what is going on? So that, thank you. That shows that.
I am worried.
So thank you.
Other questions? Anybody?
No, that was very nice.
All right, good question. So.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jeff. That was a nice talk. That was a nice interview, I thought.
No, it was wonderful. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
I always tell people, you know, before to go on Amazon, leave her a rating or review.
Yeah,
it makes a really big difference.
Help. Yeah.
But right. When people are looking, they haven't tried an author before, and they see a bunch of reviews, it does tend to help. So you said you just turned in your book. Other than going through the editing with Level Best, what's next for you?
I'm doing a short story anthology. I'm coordinating a short story anthology. Short stories to the tune of Marvin Gaye.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah, you know how we have, there's a lot of these anthologies inspired by the music of Marvin Gaye, though.
So you're editing the anthology?
Yeah.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. And are you putting out like a general call, or are you doing it
by
No,
we have like several people, like 12 people. Signed up.
Have you done that before?
Nope, it's my
birthday. Oh, that'll be really fun. And so, when you mentioned Sisters in Crime a bunch of times, and you were certainly very active with them. A lot of these groups do these types of anthologies. Is that community important for you as an author?
Yeah, I was the president. I'm not now, but I think it's very helpful because you learned a lot. Very, very helpful.
And where should people who are watching this go to find your work?
Amazon, I'm saying on my little card, the QR, we have Level Best Books, Amazon, Noble, Apple, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, bookshop.org.
So you're wide, you're everywhere.
That's what it said here.
And do you have a website?
Yeah, but I'll never really look at that, but yeah, no.
No?
We'll say no.
That's a fishy answer, Paula.
We'll just say no because I have to fix that up.
Now I want to go look at it. It's going to be like Cab Driver's Gone Wild or something. Okay, we'll take a look.
Well, you ran with that cab driver.
I know. All right. Well, Paula, thank you so much. Congratulations on the book.
And thank you for having us.